Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
That's Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Welcome to another episode of The Smiley Show. I'm Charlie Hume. He is Smiley Kaufman. And this week we've got something a little bit different for you all. Something interesting. We have dabbled in the world of golf content drafts before. If you've listened to the show for a while now, you may have heard Smiley and I reference the legendary Thanksgiving League episode. Somehow wasn't met with the critical acclaim we expected for the roller coaster that it was.
We thought that could have been our break.
We came out of that record. We thought, hey, we might have something. And turns out I don't know whether or not we did have something, but it certainly didn't do the numbers we thought it would.
I'm not sure if more than 200 people listened to it, but since we have completed that episode, maybe a year into it, I have gotten at least 10 people to listen to it, and they all said how ridiculous it was. And so it was good to hear.
It's good. You know, it's one of those things where it's funny now. We've talked to, like the Brian Bros. We've talked to Grant Horvat, you know, the Dude Perfect, where they talk about looking back at all their old stuff. And they're like, you know, I cringe when, you know, Grant, I cringe when I see the marshmallow intro music and I'm out fishing. It's like, I wonder how we're going to look back on the TGL years from now. I think fondly forever. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, go, I don't disagree.
Anyways, that is a tee up of sorts for what we are going to attempt to do today, which is we're in the NFL draft sort of mode right now. Lots of chatter around Shedeur Sanders, many other storylines. And we were thinking, what if we did a version of that as it relates to the game of golf? And so here's what we have for you. OK, Smiley, I'm just going to explain this as clearly as I can. Please ask questions if I'm not making it clear enough. All right. You are now the owner of a franchise. Okay. Smiley's Golf Club. You guys, you have a mascot. His name's Mr. Haya. He runs around. He aims a t-shirt can at the fans and the t-shirt shootout way to the right. It's great. Everyone loves him. So it's a wonderful franchise. Okay. You are drafting 12 players to be on this franchise. Okay. And the goal of this franchise is between now and 2035, a 10-year window, you're trying to earn as much prize money and win as many trophies or the most prestigious set of trophies as you can to keep all the fans of Smiley's Golf Club happy, okay? You could draft any golfer on the face of the earth, right? But of course, what you're going to get rewarded for is earning prize money and winning trophies. So I say that to say you could draft an amateur player who's not going to earn for the next couple of years, but could have a great start to his career. You could draft a guy who's maybe in the twilight of his career, but you think he's going to win a lot in the next 5 years, and that'll be enough to get you through. But that is the premise, okay? Have I explained that clearly enough?
The only thing I think we must mention here is that how do you compare a win on the PGA Tour versus a win on the LIV Tour? Do you hold them in the same light? That's kind of the big question. In this hypothetical, you know, I think many, many fans hold a PGA Tour win or signature win, event win in a higher regard than a LIV Golf Tour win. So that's the hard question here.
Smiley, I think, as is the case in any sort of contrived thing that you're doing of this nature, that is where we embrace debate. That's where we leave it to the fans to decide whether or not a win in LIV Singapore is the same as winning, you know, the RBC Heritage. Okay. There'd be different prize money, but that's kind of that's the piece of this that you all get to go take and debate on the back end. So that's what we're going to do. You are going to have the first pick of the draft, and we're going to do a snake draft. Before we get to that, it's a perfect way to set this thing up is our friends at Ahead. This is going to be a combination. We're going to call this a little bit of the elements of Ahead, the expert team elements that makes Ahead such a great company. But it's also a little bit of a look ahead. See what I did there for the next 10 years. See which these players are going to play well and talking about why they will play well. So Ahead is a strategic partner for enterprise clients, helping them navigate the path toward digital transformation, much like an expert caddy, reading the course ahead and providing the winning combination of technology and execution. Learn more at ahead.com. I'm very excited to draft this. It's a look ahead expert team. Let's do the thing. So, and I think here's what that makes the most sense is, you know, you make your first overall pick, and then I'll have two after that, and then two all the way through. But let's talk about why you think this player at his current age and form is going to do well over the next 10 years. So lead us off, Smiley.
Okay, trying to build an expert team here, but also trying to turn on my thinking cap of what the future may look like. And it's hard for me not to be a prisoner of the moment here and keeping an eye on what we've just kind of witnessed over the last year. And this is where it's tough, because how old is Rory now? Is Rory 36?
Rory is 35 years old. And he turns 36, I think, in about a month. So you're looking at, I mean, let's say grandfather in this year's results, or maybe, I think that probably makes sense. We're talking about start 25 to end of 35. So he'll be 46 at the end of your window.
Is it terrible that there's not the number one pick isn't obvious right now?
I think the number one pick is, well, actually, I think the number one pick is pretty obvious, but I think there is a very, very strong case for who a co-number one pick or maybe the number one overall pick could be, and it's not Rory, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah,
so I'm actually very intrigued to see where you're going to go here, because I think it sheds a light on like why this is an interesting exercise.
Okay, I am going to go with Scottie Scheffler.
And I think that's the obvious one.
I think it's obvious in the fact that the ball striking is what is king. It's what is consistency. It's what separates the best players in the world. When you look at data over the last however many years, the dudes that hit it the best are always the players that typically are the best players in the world. Scottie Scheffler has been one of the best ball strikers over the last 5 years. I'm banking on that he will continue this trend over the next 10. We haven't even had a Scottie major run yet, so I'm banking on his ability to win some majors over the next 10 years. And this is the first selection. It's Scottie Scheffler.
that's the incorrect jingle, but I like what you tried to do there.
Really?
We'll get Jax to throw in. It's like, it goes, da, 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 da.
That's like the fantasy football one.
That's like, well, I think that's the one they use for all of it, but you did like the,
that's like Monday Night Football.
Yeah, that's right. That's what that is. I go on a whole other tangent. Sometimes Walker and I at bedtime, we play like a tackle football game, and I put on like the old NFL primetime music. You know, it's great. Like, way to get your kid totally keyed up before he tries to go to bed. It's terrible, terrible parenting, but we have lots of fun with it. So Scottie, you're going to get him from age 28 to age 38. And this is another interesting part of this is I was looking through a list of guys and their ages, and just you think of a sporting prime as being kind of early 20s. And really for a lot of guys, they don't find it until kind of mid to late 20s, and they can extend that window further than you'd think. So to me, I think Scottie's almost the perfect section of his career to be, you know, earning money and winning trophies. And I wonder how you think Scotty's game is going to age. You know, what things do you think he's going to be doing differently at age 38?
Oh, gosh. How many kids will he have? That's I think that's the like the next thing you got to ask before you were talking about his golf game. I don't think his golf game is going to change a whole lot. Yeah. I think he might have a little gray in his beard.
Yeah, that's probably a fair shout there. If he sticks with that through 38, I think it's interesting because some of these guys, you know, and we'll get to it kind of later on. You know, I'm not gonna try to hold my players too close to my vest. I was looking at a guy like Will Zalatoris, who is 28 years old right now,
and you're gonna take him at first?
No. I'm just saying, looking at the way guys are gonna progress, and you're saying you think Scotty's gonna kind of remain the same, right? What I'm saying is thinking about. Will Zalatoris?
I think he's going to win majors, Scotty. So
totally
remaining the same. I think just depends on how you judge it. I'm taking the chance to win five plus majors.
Yeah, no, totally. The point I'm making on Zalatoris is more so thinking about, you know, the way these guys factor in injury, factoring in form, factoring in, you know, what level you think their game is going to be at that point. What is their superpower? Does their superpower get lost as they get older? It's just it's interesting. So you have Scotty 1-1, like the pick, obviously, I now have two. I'm going, and this is the guy who I thought is undisputed second. And you maybe had an argument for first. Ludvig Åberg. At age 25. I mean, you're getting the perfect slice of professional golf prime, 25, 35. On the note of injury, you know, a little bit of that knee issue he had last year after the Masters, and then coming into this year, looks like it's healthy, played well. But I just think Ludvig is that golf swing is so repeatable, really not going to get too far off in any, you know, direction. And if he doesn't, like, I worried a little bit about the fact that injury was workout related and how hard is he going to go in the gym? And is he going to have to, you know, think about things like Brooks Koepka has, where you can't go as hard as you want to in working out as you age because things like pliability and flexibility, those things are more important. But if Ludvig keeps that swing, which it seems like he will, I think he's going to win a lot of majors in the next 10 years and a lot of money in the process. So I feel like he's the guy to take at that spot.
All right. I like it. I've said he's I think he'll be a number one player in the world at some point. And you'd have to think it'd be the next 10 years if it would happen.
So second pick of the draft is where it gets intriguing because there are a lot of good options here. And you're trying to think about who is,
this is where you start overthinking it already. And I'm loving it.
I'm already, and I kind of want to do something crazy because I feel like that's the best thing to get talking points going in these drafts. I'm going to go with Joaquin Niemann at 26 years old.
Wow.
So 26 to 36, because here's my calculus on Joaquin. And I guess I'm also making a bet that LIV Golf continues. But let's see, if you're rolling in this 2025 year, and he's won three times with massive purses on LIV, like that's a huge chunk of cash in the purse. And I feel like Joaquin, you know, talking about the way guys' game evolves, like you kind of come on the scene, you're one of these guys who has insane ball speed and does all this good stuff, and then you learn to win as you get older and you mature, and maybe you lose some of that distance, but that's replaced with the wisdom of playing professional golf. And for him, I feel like he's going to win a few majors at some point. I think it's going to take some time as he kind of grows into that mature version of his game. So I like having two guys that are early prime to kind of be the cornerstone of my franchise.
Okay. That really opened up the board here for me for my next two picks.
All right. Take it away.
But I think that was a big time reach at number two. I think you could have gotten him in the next round.
Wow. This is what I do in these drafts, buddy. I'm stirring the pot. I'm trying to kind of, you know,
This is easy. Rory and Rom, that just seems way too simple.
So you think Rory through 46? I mean, because I guess you're banking on what he's going to do in the next 4 to 5 years.
At 35, he's still one or not. He's one of the longest players in the world. I just don't think, if anything, he may not hit it quite as far, but I just think of like, who's a good example of somebody in their mid 40s? It's like Sergio, like 43, 44. He's still playing some really good golf over at LIV, still hits it plenty far enough. Rory's golf swing and the way his body moves and how strong he is. I don't think it's he's held up injury wise over the course of his career for the most part. So Rory, I don't care. Yeah. Give it to me. He might be fully gray at that point, but give me Rory at two. And Rom still, I mean, you gotta take his consistency.
And he's 30. That's a really nice chunk of that prime window.
Yeah. So I'm very happy to have Rom there at three. So I have Scotty, Rory, and Rom. Arguably the, you know, it's a good spot to be. And I feel even better about my next two picks, cause I think you're going to screw up the next two.
You think I'm going to zag here a little bit? I mean, I've got some interesting options on the table here. And I think I'm going to go with, this is a tough one. This is a very tough one. So I'm looking at ages and I'm looking at, I think next I'm going to go Xander at the age of 31, because I just think his game is, you know, we've talked a lot about Xander is a five tool guy. Like he's got all of the, he does everything well. And I feel like that level of consistency, once he had the breakthrough, won his first and second majors last year, that I know he's been injured a little bit this year, but once he finds that form again, I think it's just, he's always going to be in and around it. He's going to be near the top of the money list every year because he's consistent. And then the years where he really peaks and wins majors are going to be the ones where he cashes in and brings a lot of trophies to my franchise. So I got Xander with my third round pick. And then in the fourth round, this is where it gets tricky because, the two guys I'm considering, it's just tough to project. I'm going to go with Colin Morikawa because he's a little bit younger than the other guy I'm looking at. He's 28 years old right now. You get the 28 to 38 year, the same sort of track as Scottie Scheffler in terms of age and prime. So I've got Ludwig Åberg, Joaquin Niemann, Xander Schauffele, and Colin Morikawa. I like that. I like that nucleus. Did I mess that up as much as you thought I was going to?
No, you did exactly what I thought you would do, which is perfect.
You don't like those two?
No, I just wouldn't have put them on my team. But I'm happy you put them on yours.
I'm glad. I'll make sure we clip out that bulletin board material and get that in front of Xander and call him or call him. Really? Okay. Well, I'm curious.
This is. I mean, you have to take Xander there. He's won the last two, two of the last three majors or four majors, whatever it is. Morikawa, you wonder, does he have a run of wins in him? You know, the consistency is going to be there. Is it going to be a lot of top tens, or are they going to be a lot of wins? I think that's a question mark there with Colin.
There has to be a breakthrough there with Colin, right? Like, especially as he gets.
He's so accurate, Charlie, but you have to wonder too about just distance. And the other thing too, you got to throw in there is that you can't project is a potential for new equipment. And what does a rollback look like? These are all things that now Morikawa and his ability to hit a golf ball and precise and in the middle of the face. Okay. Morikawa just moved up my board pretty quick. So, that's also something else
you're on the cutting edge of this league. You got like a sabermetrics department that's evaluating potential impact of ball rollbacks on your roster. Yeah. I love this for you.
Which is why I think the game still is about length, which is why I'm going to have Bryson on my team.
That was the guy I was considering. So that I like that.
So Bryson has to be on my team here.
Okay.
And I'm very torn on the next pick for me. Do I take a player who I think has tons of wins in them, but also we just don't know what's going to happen with his future? And this is I'm talking about Victor Hovland. I'm also looking at Justin Thomas here as somebody who's won a lot of times, who I think is going to win a whole lot more. But now we're looking at
let's see, JT will be 31-41, which is a run of, during his prime. Victor, definitely.
He's 27.
27.
Yeah.
Which is why I think I'm going to have to go with a little younger Victor Hovland right here.
Okay. Victor Hovland, that's your fifth round pick. And so that gets you to, so your roster currently is Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, John Rahm, Bryson DeChambeau, Victor Hovland. That's pretty good looking right there. So, I mean, so you think, would you have taken Bryson and Victor ahead of both Xander and Colin?
I would have, if Xander was still there, I would have taken him over Victor.
Yeah. All right. Well, that leaves it to me. So I am, you mentioned a guy that I was considering, my fifth round pick. Man, yeah, I think it'd be foolish of me, especially given the form he's sort of found and the basics he's gotten back to. I know it's a small sample size thus far, but he's been training these past couple of years and he wins the Heritage. I think I got to go with JT here. I really think I got to go with JT.
It was just an age thing.
Yeah.
I don't know why. No rhyme or reason.
Yeah. So that's why, I mean, now we're getting into a very interesting section of this draft because you're starting to – you're looking at guys are like, am I going to cash for the next few years on guys that are playing well right now? Or am I going to look at some potential going forward? And I don't want to leave any of these guys on the board. So for my next pick, I'm going to go. Oh, man, this is so hard. This is very difficult. Plus, I don't want you to like make fun of me if I make the bad or the wrong pick, you know, and I feel like that inevitably is going to happen here. But you know what? That doesn't matter to me. I'm going to go do the thing I want to do. I'm taking Minwoo Lee here. Lee, age 26 to 36, won his first tournament this year on tour. He, no matter if they roll the ball back or what happens, he's going to be long and he's going to keep that length for a long period of time, given his age. So I'm going with Minwoo there in my sixth round pick. So.
I honestly didn't even think about Minwoo. That's wild.
Yeah, I mean, let me tee you up here, Smiley. So what I'd like for you to do is give me your next pick, and then we're going to take a little break between. And then we'll get you right back to the top of your seventh round pick, okay? So don't give me both yet, all right?
Okay, so first pick here, I am going to go with the second half of his career, which I think could be terrific as long as he stays healthy. The health is the only thing that's holding me back here. Give me Mr. Jordan Spieth.
I had a feeling that was coming.
The health is the only thing that concerns me.
Yeah, just the wrist, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, we're just playing well, you just this never season. Know.
All right. Well, so that's here. Let's just take it. We've got half our rosters drafted thus far. Smiley has Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, John Rahm, Bryson DeChambeau, Victor Hovland, and Jordan Spieth. It's a good looking team. And I have Ludvig Åberg, Joaquin Niemann, Xander Schauffele, Colin Morikawa, Justin Thomas, and Minwoo Lee. What grades are you giving us right now, Smiley?
I think I probably get an A minus, and okay. I think you probably get a C plus.
Yeah, I'm going to give myself.
I would maybe even argue a C.
A C. Yeah, that's tough. It depends on who's grading. If it's Mel Kiper, it's an F because I don't have Shedeur Sanders on this team. So, listen, we're going to get to the second half of this draft, but before we do that, we have to hear about another one of our partners here at the Smiley Show, House of Atlas. Which we've been using their shave products for the last few weeks. The razors are amazing. We've been using the shaving cream, the aftershave. I'm wondering, Smiley, we kind of dabbled in this conversation at the Masters, and you teed it up here. So we think Scotty's going to be still rocking a beard in 10 years with the grays. I think Rahm is a candidate for that too. Like Rahm with the salt pepper beard. I think that's going to be a look.
I think Jordan could be using JT too could be using their essential razor kit from House of Atlas to not only be shaving their face, but shaving the top of their head. Ooh. I think that's a possibility that you can't rule out. Cannot rule it out.
Who do you think
full Sepp Straka mode?
Who do you think is winning that race right now to male pattern balding? Georgia
JT's definitely has more lettuce. I would say I'd be more concerned about Jordan. Just picture Brant Seneca right now. Just picture that's Jordan.
That would be a nice late career look for Jordan.
And if this is the case, like I regret my last, like I just, it's hard to put a whole lot of credit, you know, with that look moving forward, but hey, he's on my team. I just got to support him at this point.
That's perfect. Just age of 41, the final season of Smiley's Golf Club. And Jordan Spieth is out there, using a House of Atlas razor just to shave that head. So he looks like Brant Snedeker. I love that. It's a great visual. And for a limited time right now, House of Atlas is offering 15% off your first order when you purchased any razor kit and the before and after set, which includes the precision shave cream, which Jordan will be lathering all over the top of his head, and the calming aftershave, which I guess you could put aftershave on your head. That's actually a good question. I wonder if people who shave their head put aftershave on their head.
I would. I mean, you smell nice.
It smells great. You can use the code SMILEY at houseofatlas.com. That's HOUSEOFATLAS.com with promo code SMILEY for 15% off your new razor kit before and after set. Stop wasting money and time on shaving products that don't look good, aren't effective, and cost way too much. Visit houseofatlas.com today. Smiley, you remain on the clock. You have your seventh round pick coming up next. Who you got?
This is where I'm going to start going into a little bit of projection and reach mode. And I couldn't be more thrilled about this gentleman joining my team. Ugh. I know you know who I'm taking. I'm taking Luke Clanton.
Gosh, dang it. See, this is, and that was the tough. It's like, how long were you going to leave Luke Clanton out on the board? And I
couldn't believe you took him in Wu. I couldn't believe you took him when I thought for sure you were taking Luke Clanton.
Golly.
So it was nice to get a little bit of an experienced player like Jordan and then throw in Luke Clanton there. I just like the way this team's shaping up, and I really feel good about the rest of my team moving forward on where I'm heading, because I think you can kind of go a lot of different directions here moving up.
Well, here's what's going to happen is you're going to put this team on a graphic and everyone's going to see the top heavy nature of it. And they're going to see Luke Clanton's name and they're just going to love it. They're just going to eat it up. So you did the fan favorite thing. You know, if you're you draft Cam Scadabo in the fourth round, all the Giants faithful are just very happy about that. So good for you. And I'm ruining my lost opportunity, but that's okay, because we have a lot of youth on this team and we're trying to kind of balance here for the short and long term, but there's still some exciting players out there on the board. All right, and now that we're having a run on youth talent, I'm pulling my ace in the hole here, and I'm gonna draft Miles Russell. And I'm going 16-year-old Miles Russell. I'm owning Miles Russell from 16 to 26. And Miles is going to bring me this is bringing back vivid flashbacks of the Thanksgiving League draft and where we ended up there. Miles is 16. I love this pick. It's great value long term.
Okay. All right, give me best case scenario of what you get out of Miles Russell on your team over the next 10 years.
We can get three majors. Think Miles Russell won three majors by the time he turns 26.
Who are the youngest major winners and what age? Tiger at how old was he?
Tiger Woods.
Was he 97?
Win age. I want to make sure I get this right. 21. 3 months and 14 days.
So you think
let's look up youngest major winners golf. Just make sure we get this full list correct.
Jordan was 23.
That sounds right. Youngest golf. Okay, here we go. Youngest players won a major championship. Six players under 22 and a half years old won a major. Tiger 21. Oh, this is it. Okay, yeah. Tiger 21, Jordan at 21 twice, Seve at 22. listen, Smiley, this might be a little bit of a reach, but I mean, that's I'm here for the content, and I have utmost. I'm happy that Miles Russell's on my team, and I'm not gonna regret it. Okay, so the next place I'm going is I'm going to draft. I think I'm going to go Akshay Bhatia here. Yeah.
Shoot.
Akshay Bhatia.
He was about to make my lineup.
Yeah. I'm loading up on some lefties here. I'm partial to left-handers given this my son's handedness. So that's what I'm going to sell this as.
Okay. Akshay was definitely a young player. I was looking at there for sure. Now it really kind of puts me in a bit of a bind on what I want to do. I know you're listening right now. You probably got ideas in your head of where I should go.
So many people are screaming at their screen right now. Take this guy.
I am not in the camp of a player or let's see. I'm not in the camp of someone who has lost faith. Actually, I think I can get him later. I'm not going to pick him. I think I can get him later. God, this is hard, man.
It's difficult because you're trying to project long term. That's why Miles Russell is such a good pick, you know, just because he's going to come just right into form at the end of my championship window.
That's right. Okay, hold on 1 second. I'm sorry for the delay, folks. I have
That's
to go
okay.
see
this
who's,
is how drafts work.
I've got to go see who's on the live.
We should put you on the clock, okay. That's for sure.
You definitely could. Give me another 30 seconds.
How old is I'm doing some of my own Googling on my side.
All right, I'm going to take Caleb Surratt.
Oh, okay. But I mean, is he in any majors at all?
Not yet.
And do you think he will be? And how's he going to do that? I guess he's 21 years old. He's going to have to do it via the qualifying criteria that Liv set up. And that could be expanded in future years. Okay, I don't hate it. I don't hate it.
And I'm going to take David Puge. We're going to run on young Liv talent going on right here.
This kind of surprised me. I believe I want to pull his name right here. I have the Data Golf rankings up here. He is 37th in the Data Golf World rankings. David Puge is. So I know you're very.
Listen, you're starting to wonder. Maybe I should have taken David Puge over Miles Russell. No.
He was on my big board. He was lower than Miles Russell on my big board.
This is not a Miles Rice Russell hating. I'm not hating on. I don't like him at number 7.
I'm gonna clip all this and send it to all these guys for bulletin board material. Just Colin Sander, Miles Russell, just fuel the fire. All right, so you got okay. So Caleb I like both of those. You know, there's a little bit of a gamble involved in the live guys, but in how it all comes back together,
100%. A little bit.
I like it.
A little bit.
All right, so this next one is.
I think to be fair, I think I just took two of their most. Young talent, like their best talent behind Joaquim Niemann. They're two youngest, most talented players behind those two guys or behind Niemann. So I feel great about it.
Okay. So this next one I'm doing for this one is for one of your buddies at home in Birmingham. He's going to love this pick. I know he's listening right now. I'm going Sungjae Im. Sungjae Im is 27 years old right now. He's going to have the 27 to 37 window. He likes playing lots of golf. Very consistent player. Listen, you're not thinking about team construction the proper way here, all right? Sungjae Im at 27 years old is a great value proposition. You just got to trust me on that one, all right? Okay? What don't you like about the Sungjae Im pick? AV loves that pick. He's listening right now.
I mean, if I was looking at the top 20 players in the world, which Sungjae Im is number 20, I would say that currently in his form, I would be taking a good amount of players before him. that's just my opinion of right now. Sung Jae is a very good player.
His form is going to bounce back, though. He's 27 years old.
Yeah.
He's younger than a lot of these other guys. He's got a few more prime years.
I don't know. I don't love the pick. That's just my opinion.
Well, that's fair. That's fair. So, all right. So we're doing Sung Jae, and then we're going to do. Oof. Wait. Man.
Okay. It is still you.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's me. Oh, man. Which one of these guys do I want to go with? I'm going to go with Aldridge Potgieter. You hate my entire roster. My roster's interesting, though. That's for dang sure. Aldridge, once he puts the rest of his game together, I mean, the guy melts the golf ball. It's a great pick. It's a fantastic pick.
It could be a great pick. Very well could be. Here's the thing. Let's just talk about what we know and what we've seen over the last decades, right?
Yeah.
Good players don't go very far. They don't just drop off the face of the earth. You know, like the top players in the world, they don't drop off the face of the earth. So I think you've reached a little bit too much on your team in projection. Like, yes, a lot of these players could be a top player in the world, but when I look at my team, these guys have all found themselves consistently in the top, whatever, of the FedEx Cup. And now my last three picks are all projections with Klan, Surratt, and Puj. But right now, my draft, if you look at it, it's not even a comparison. I just feel bad for you at this point.
I'm going high upside. I'm going for memes. I'm going for, this is going to be a shock value graphic that Jax is going to cook up. And I'm going to get roasted in the comments, but that's going to be okay. Because look, it's anyone can just read off a list of the top 20 players in the world. It takes a little bit of talent to craft together a crew like the one I've assembled here. So,
that's right.
You know?
Okay. Tyrrell Hatton. I mean, he's winning a major this year at the Open Championship. He's my next pick.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. 8, 9, 10. What? All right. So I'm also going to take. This one might surprise you.
Okay.
With a bit of an injury history, but I can't discount the dog in him. And I think he's got a second half to his career that ain't done yet. That's Daniel Berger.
Oh, I think he will win
a major by the time his career is over.
32 years old. That's. You're going to get a little bit of stick for that pick on your graphic. Although I don't hate it. I mean, I think it's one of those things where that's the same conversation that we're having about like Will Zalatoris. It's interesting that I think it says a lot about where Will Zalatoris is, that Will Zalatoris is 4 years younger than Daniel Berger, and they both had back injuries, and you like Berger at that spot more to win a major than Will Zalatoris.
What I like about Berger is that when he's had the opportunity to come up in big moments, he has. And I'm banking on his confidence. I think it's a bit of a reach there, but I think he's going to have a really nice stretch here over the next, I don't know if it'll be 10 years, maybe. I mean, it's all a guess, but I like Berger on my team. I think he brings a lot of grit, a lot of dog, and he's a heck of a player.
I like it. I think it's
he's so chill, though. That's the only thing that worries me is like, how motivated is he going to be at the end of the last 10 years? I could totally see this being like a great pick in the eyes of people, but I don't mind it.
Well, that leaves me my last two picks, and I'm going to make it nice and easy on you. Give me the Højgaard brothers, both of them. Just put both of them on the squad in whichever order you want to have them join. 24 years old. I mean, that's some great value right there at the end of my draft. Getting both of them. Just, you hate my team. I've got Ludwig Goberg, Joaquin Niemann, Xander Schauffele, Colin Morikawa, Justin Thomas, Minwoo Lee, Miles Russell, Akshay Batia, Sung J M, Aldrich Potgieter, and Nikolai and Rasmus Højgaard. That's a fun team to root for right there. I'll tell you what.
Yeah, I mean it's wild, and I'm just gonna come again. It's gonna be completely opposite of the direction you've gone.
Okay.
My last pick is going to be Brooks Koepka.
Wow. Yeah. See, I had a lot of old guys on my do not draft list.
And was Brooks off your big board?
Brooks wasn't even on the big board. He's 34 years old, and he's had knee injuries before. Do you think Brooks wins another major?
I think he could. Yeah.
Okay.
And, maybe his run's over. Maybe this is a bad pick at 12. But guess what? If he happens to find, like, if everything is healthy and he knows what he's doing, he knows how to do it. It's like riding a bike.
Yeah. Well, okay. So Smiley's team is Scottie Scheffler, who will be 28-38. Rory McIlroy, he'll be 35-45. John Rahm, 30-40. Bryson DeChambeau, 31-41. Victor Hovland, 27-37. Jordan Spieth, 31-41. Luke Clanton, 21-31. Caleb Surratt, 21-31. David Puge, 23-33. Tyrrell Hatton, 33-43. Daniel Berger, 32-42. And Brooks Koepka, 34-44. It's a pretty good roster there. And mine are, so I'll have Ludwig Oberg 25-35, Joaquin Niemann 26-36, Xander Schauffele 31-41, Colin Morikawa 28-38, Justin Thomas 31-41, Minwoo Lee 26-36, Miles Russell 16-26, Akshay Batia 23-33, Sung J M 27-37, Aldrich Potgieter 20-30, Nikolai Højgaard 24-34, Rasmus Højgaard 24-34.
That's right.
I've got a team with a lot of potential. Lot of potential.
It's the potential meter's so high.
So high.
It's so high, but then it goes back down to this is where the grade is. And you got a lot of, like, you can continue to work up to your potential, but we got a long way to go.
All right. Well, here's a perfect way to kind of wrap this thing up, Smiley, because
who didn't get drafted? Let's start there.
Okay.
I think players that are top of mind to me would be Patrick Cantlay.
Yep.
I would say that you could probably put Wyndham Clark, Willie Z,
Hideki Sam Matsuyama. Burns,
Hideki. I was never touching Hideki with his injuries.
Yeah, 33. Like, that's, yeah.
I think Gawa was another young player.
Degala's 27 now.
Jackson Koivun.
Yep. Sam Burns, 28.
Yep.
Davis Thompson, 25.
I was looking at the top 100 of the OWGR, and I just wasn't.
Surprised you'd go for Blades Brown, 27.
He was another player. Yeah, Blades Brown. That was another guy. So there was a group of about 10 guys that could definitely make a case. But after I made a run with Clanton Surratt and David Puge, I felt like I didn't need to continue to go younger there, because these are young, proven players already. Proven in, like, they play really well and live. And it would have been hard for me to say Blades Brown, although I liked it. I just haven't seen Blades Brown play enough hard golf courses to know how good he is. I know he's good on very scoreable golf courses at this moment. I just need to see him play some really tough tracks and see how his game holds up.
I had Carl Phillips on the big board, 23 years old, you know, one opposite field event. He's a guy that could start playing some good golf. Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of guys that, I mean, you look like Jake Knapp is 30 years old. He's going to be 40.
Jake Knapp is another guy. Yeah.
But it's interesting, but that's why this is the fun of the game. Just trying to project something that's, it's going to be. We'll keep tabs on this. We'll keep tabs on this and see how this unfolds. Yes, Smiley, that brings us to a new friend of the show, a new sponsor. And I think this perfectly illustrates why this is a valuable sponsor, because it is Magic Mind. And look at Smiley's team and look at my team. And Smiley already received his magic mind box and has been using it, loves it. And I have not. And so that's what happens when you don't have your magic mind. Smiley, we're just getting this thing started, still kind of dialing in all the codes and things of that nature. But this is a cool one because you love this. You use this. So tell us a little bit about it.
So there's the magic mind. This is their sleep performance shot. They also have their general basic magic mind shot, which is basically a focus intense shot to where you would take it right before you go play golf. Helps kind of calm the nerves, makes you focus in a little bit better. Haven't had a chance to use that yet, but boy, do I need it, and I need it quickly with a bit of anxiety going on in my head with the golf game where it's at. But this sucker I can speak to, this sleep performance doodad here, I'm telling you, you know, I've taken what it would be like Advil PM, or you take, you know, the what's the deal that you had the weird dreams when you take it? Melatonin.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
So I've always hated that. I woke up groggy, hated it. But this Magic Mind is, first off, it doesn't taste bad. So a lot of things that are this size, you think about, you're like, oh gosh, how am I going to get this down? First off, it tastes okay. Quite fine, in fact. And I tell you what, and most of the time I take it literally when my head hits the pillow, I'm like, okay, take retainer out, chug this real quick, and then like start the falling asleep process. And next thing you know, it's morning. I'm telling you, it is so quick how fast it knocks me out. There's some science. We're waiting on the one sheeter from them to really give you the full lowdown. But one of the things that from the call that we just had, talked about how quickly it gets into your bloodstream. I'm sure we can give you a whole lot more information on that pretty soon. So I'm not gonna bore you here with the science. I'm just gonna let you know here that it's unbelievable. It's some of the best stuff, and I'm not groggy the next day. So like, yeah. I wake up ready to rock, get some coffee, ready to go. So it's terrific.
You check out magicmind.com. That's magicmind.com for more info on that product. And like Smiley said, next time we'll have a little more info for you, some codes, some information on how you can use it. And the other side, the energy side of things that, you know, for some people you can mix with your coffee, some people you can even replace your coffee with. So excited to bring that to you, and very thankful to Magic Mind for coming on board. So Smiley, that's the end of our draft. We'll get Jax to work up a little graphic for us and see how many people love my youth laden team. But here's what we're going to do next for podcast listeners. This is the end of the YouTube version of this show. But on the pod, you're going to hear a conversation that Smiley had with Ben Crenshaw a few weeks ago in Augusta for the Masters. It was super cool. Some of that stuff, of course, is going to be on the front end of that week and before watching Rory eventually go out and win this tournament, some discussion that's topical, but a lot of it is big picture, Ben's memories, champions dinners, super cool stories, talking about putting, really, really cool stuff there. So stick around for that. Smiley with Ben Crenshaw. And then Smiley, what do we got next? We have a recap of, hey, how about this? I saw this thing. I think they're regressing TPC Craig Ranch. I think they're going away from Zoysia to Tiptoff. Tiptoff Bermuda.
Wait, when are they doing that?
After this year's event.
Okay, that makes the golf course play different.
Well
in a good way.
That's what I'm saying. I this is could be the end of our long national nightmare. I'm excited for you.
Zoysia is great. It's great for you and I. It keeps Zoysia. The golf ball nice and high on a tee. It keeps the ball in the fairway when it's kind of around it. But what it's not great for is challenging sometimes the best players in the world. They love Zoysia.
I can't wait.
They think it's pretty nice.
I cannot wait to get some Zoysia at Hope Valley, and I cannot wait to see some Tiff Tuff Bermuda down at TPC Craig Ranch so we can take a look. And that's next year, of course. So we'll be recapping the Zoysia version of this tournament, unfortunately, at the end of this weekend. But yeah, stick around for Ben Crenshaw. We'll talk to you all very soon.
Well, welcome to a special episode of The Smiley Show. We are joined by legend Ben Crenshaw, otherwise known as Gentle Ben, and this is a real treat for me, is obviously...
No legends here.
Yeah, okay. Well, you've always been a legend in my mind, so really fun to be sitting down with you. The week of the Masters, it's Monday of the Masters, and we're sitting here on a rainy day, have some time to maybe talk about some old times, whether it's winning two Masters or, you know, just your career in general. And Ben, one of the first things I think about with your game is how great you were with the putter. We got a little putting green here behind us, and that's what kind of it reminds me of how good you were around the greens. And was that something right from the get-go as a junior when you picked up a putter that just felt easy and natural to you?
You know, our old teacher, Harvey Peenick, used to really encourage us to putt. He said, I want you boys to play, but I want you all to end up on the putting green, and I want you all to have matches with each other. It'll keep you sharp that way. And he said, you got to putt for something. Maybe it's a Coca-Cola or something. But he said it always sharpened your skills. And he wanted us to putt. Mm. Because it's such an important department of the game. And as you know, here, it's another element. you play tournament golf and you get to a set of challenging greens, mm-hmm. but then you always kind of parallel that to what your experiences are at Augusta here,
right?
Because these can be the meanest greens you could ever play.
100%.
You have to have such an imagination to putt here, and it's a lot about pace, mm-hmm. and the pace has to be just right, and. Also, it's not a fable, but it's true that the putts tend to go down to the bottom of the golf course. And my old caddy, Carl Jackson, who helped me so much you can't believe during this time. And a lot of people thought that the spot was the 12th green. And he said, no, it's really not. It's just over the back of the 11th green.
Wow.
Where the water goes out.
That's right.
Where the bridge is. Where you sit at the bridge. That's the low point.
It's funny you say that, because in my notes, in my Augusta National book, I have the pull going to behind the 11th green. So I got some good advice.
There you go. And it's unbelievable how many times that affects a putt, mm-hmm. over a lot of greens. And you've got to know that. And I've always thought that, we've only had, Fuzzy Zeller's only the first-time winner.
I tried to join him.
I know you did. I know you did. But there's a lot to take in, a lot to learn, not only about the greens,
right.
but how the shots play and the change in elevation. Mm-hmm. You've got to know where downhill and uphill is, what affects your club selection. But it only comes after a few years of playing.
Right.
So there's a lot to learn, but it's, to me, I've played tournament golf all my life, but there was nothing, Smiley, like being in contention in this tournament. It was so much fun.
It's the best.
But it was... I know this, that my nerves were strung out like piano wire when I got in contention and in the fray. That was so exhilarating, nothing like it.
And Justin Leonard, I was reading something that he said about you, talking about how you had the best speed of any player he's ever played with when it came to your putting. And he described how you would slice putts, you would hook putts, you would putt them off the toe. And this all speaks to just the creative and the feel that you have to be a good putter, and especially for Augusta National.
There's not many places where you can play a 10-foot break and have it come around just right. Mm. And it's a lot of fun. But it's nervy, because it can make you look silly. It's done that to me many, many times, where you have an approach putt from 30 feet and you leave it 8 feet out somewhere. Mm-hmm. But it's done that to us all.
Totally.
But also, if you do make a putt like that for a save or something, it gives you a charge like that. It gives you so much confidence.
Totally.
But the golf course to me is, you can't play safe and win this tournament. Mm-hmm. There's a way to play it safe, but you're not going to score. And there's some times where you have to ask yourself to really hit a golf shot somehow. And it's tough to do. But you could, when you know to get close to a flag, you have to shave an edge of a bunker closely, or it has to go up a slope and then come down. It's hard to do, but when they come off, it really gives you some confidence.
And in this day and age, you know, you turn on the TV now and you watch golf. And even this past, I believe it was Saturday, the drive, chip, and putt, I'm sitting there watching on TV, and I'm watching all these juniors, and they're going through this aim point process where they're stepping all over the place. And then you see, you know, they're copying the pros, of course, who do it all the time. In your day and age when you played, if you'd have seen a player, you know, running through this type of system, you would have said, this guy's crazy. But there's obviously a formula that seems to work for these guys to figure out how to putt better.
I know. There's putting's very technical. The way it's taught these days are, you know, I know nothing about aim point. I know nothing about that stuff. And it's amazing, you know, and I really don't understand straddling the line of the putt. It doesn't compute with me. It's the most scientific part of the game. Mm. You know, obviously the closer you get, the more mysterious it comes, and it can mean so much to your round, but the ways to figure it out, I think I do remember there's a line that Bobby Jones wrote a long time ago. He said, if anyone hopes to reduce putting to a science, they're in for disappointment.
It was Boy, so things have changed.
I thought it made so much common sense. He said the ability to gauge a slope and the pace of a putt is the way you should do it. And that's
how I've done it.
If it was good for him, it was good for me.
And you know who else has done that is Scotty Scheffler and Jordan Spieth, two Texas guys. Man. Of course, I'm sure you have a rooting interest for anybody from the state of Texas. You know, watching Jordan Spieth did what he did in 2015, and of course, watching him in 16 and what happened. And then, of course, Scotty Scheffler, who's been on a tear over the last couple of years and has a chance to win three of the last four Masters. You know, your perspective of watching those two guys, how their games differ, and what impresses you the most about them?
I can't help it. Those two are my favorites.
Right up the top. You star, right?
Yeah, I love both of them. They're such great guys, and they've got exceptional talents. You know, Jordan has a unbelievable touch. Obviously, when he made all those putts, but his short game, his chipping is unbelievable.
Savvy like.
Yeah, and there's not a spot where he's not gunning for the hole, or he can hit a lot of different shots. But I tell you, the tall man, Scotty, can hit some beautiful little short shots.
Underrated.
Yeah, I think so too. I think he has that upright angle of attack that really helps him.
Probably growing up on Bermuda, you know, you have to be, you know, have that descending blow on the ball or the grain's going to get you.
That's right, and he's nervy putting too. Mm-hmm. But they're exceptional the way they grew up, and highly competitive, both of them. But a belief in their abilities on and around the greens.
Yeah.
Scotty's ball striking and with that big upright swing is just something to behold. He can hit it way high when he wants to. And of course, I always loved Jordan's swing too. I know that he's a little frustrated right now. Mm-hmm. He'd like to be doing a little bit better, but I think he's shown some good signs of late, and I think this place turns him on.
It does.
And I look for him to play really well.
You know, I was reading something as well. Davis Love said there's always a little bit of magic when you talk about Ben Crenshaw, whether, you know, it was a bounce or two you got or big moments that you had or quotes that you gave to the press. And you can't help but think there's a little bit of magic, too, in Jordan Spieth. When you watch him play golf, you can't look away. And we talk about how it's the Jordan Spieth experience. But do you see that same little magic in Jordan that maybe you kind of carried when you played the game of golf?
He's had many moments. You know, one that I can really think of is when he won the NCAA for Texas at Riviera.
And he holds that shot at 15.
Unbelievable.
Against Justin Thomas, too.
You know how tough that green is, number 15.
Unreal.
At Riviera. But to see that play out that last day.
Insane.
You think, well, that's the kind of magic we're talking about. But he can his kind of career has been possessed with those moments. Mm-hmm. And he can do it at the right times.
So the Champions Dinner tomorrow night, I'm sure you've got so many memories from that event. Do you typically sit next to the Texans? What's the seating chart look like? And what's been your favorite Champions Dinner of all the years you've gone?
I tell you, Smiley, it's such an honor to be in that room and to see everybody together. You know, someone told me yesterday that this is one of the few times where all living Masters champions will be together.
Oh, wow.
Well, that'll be a special occasion. You know, Gary Player is 90. He's almost 90.
Wouldn't be able to tell.
And no. And Jack is up there, but they are our two leaders. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to, when I look at them, I say, well, Arnold should be here. Arnold Palmer should be here. And they've been our trio of leaders forever in that room. It's a very special fraternity, and it's in some ways it's one of the most exclusive clubs that you can imagine. Started by Ben Hogan in 1952, and it was a very simple letter he wrote to the champions. He said it might be nice for us to get together for just a dinner.
Cool.
And it grew from there. Ben Hogan, that was 1952, was the first one. And it was ironic that later on, Byron Nelson became sort of the host of the dinner. He was very close to Clifford Roberts. Mm. Mr. Roberts liked Byron a lot. And not that he didn't like Mr. Hogan, but he carried on that tradition of sort of leading the dinner. And I'll never forget this. I was sitting at home one day. It was Mr. Nelson gotten way up there, and he said, Ben, Byron Nelson here, I'm unable to come to the Masters this year. My health just won't let me do it. And he said, I want you to take over as the host of the dinner. I'm not able to come over there. And I literally dropped the phone. He said, what happened? I said, well, Mr. Nelson, I dropped the phone. And he said, no, you love history and you love this place. Mm. He said, I want you to lead it off, keep it light, and keep it moving. And that's what's happened.
It's pretty cool. Well, we're going to definitely get into your win in 1984 and 1995. But quickly, talking about the Champions Dinner in 1985 after your win in 84, were there nerves going into that dinner about what to choose on the menu and just speaking to that whole fraternity for the first time? I've heard players, feel, like this was more nerve-wracking than actually, finishing out on 18.
Well, it's my first year that I won, 1984, I had to order some food off the menu, the club menu, mm-hmm. and then it changed. Then they said, well, you can have a meal that you wanted to design. So it really started changing after that. I think it was, let's see, 1984. Craig Stadler won the following year, and he had a different menu. But we've had so many exotic menus. I mean, we've had Vijay Singh had a Fijian menu.
What's been your favorite food that you've had, like one that stands out?
I
don't
know who it was. It was Sandy Lyle. Sandy Lyle won in 85, and okay. he brought in, of course, haggis from Scotland.
Oh, God.
I mean, it was the whole deal, too. They brought in the scabbard.
Oh, man. Was it any good?
Cut the thing. It was terrible.
It just stunk up the place, I imagine.
Oh, my God. But we've had Adam Scott brought in what was called Botany Bay bugs from Australia. Ooh. They're little shrimp.
Okay. Did you eat them?
Yeah, I did.
So it's like a little crawfish.
Matsuyama had a beautiful Japanese meal.
That's what Jordan always said, that was his favorite one.
It was exceptional. I had my last one was Salt Lick Barbecue from Austin, Texas. It was good.
I've had that. It's fantastic. Well, you got off to such a hot start in your amateur career. You won 3 national championships at Texas, individual titles. And I found it interesting that you won your first time on the PGA Tour. Actually, we just got done with the San Antonio event this past week. So that was your first win. Following week, you runner up. So you get off to this hot start where, you know, you probably just feel so invincible.
It was amazing. It was a heck of a time. I had been playing well. I got out of the qualifying at the school. We all had to qualify back then. And I was playing well, and somehow I won that tournament there in San Antonio. And then we went to Pinehurst for the World Open. 8 rounds rounds at Pinehurst. Gosh. And Miller Barber beat me. And I finished runner-up. And, you know, I'd played in some pro tournaments as an amateur. I got some exemptions, you know, and champions in Houston and Dallas and places. And I'd played some U.S. Opens, so I started to know the pros, and I've started, you know, a little more comfortable with them.
That's good.
You know, a lot of them became great friends. You know, a lot of them call me a little punk. You know, little punks here, you know.
Not quite Gentle Ben, a little punk.
but no, it was just fun. I was learning and playing well, so I did get off to a good start.
So 1973 all the way to 1984, I want to talk about just this decade before you win the Masters. There was a lot of heartbreak during that time. You had contended at many major championships. You were runner-up of the Masters in 76, 83, 75 U.S. Open, 79 Open Championship runners-up, and then, of course, a playoff loss and then 79 PGA.
Yeah.
When you think about that time from 73 to 84, you know, you came out so hot, and all you're thinking about is winning major championships and continue to win. It's not like you weren't winning on the PGA Tour. You had done it 8 times at that point. But still, how difficult was it to not come through when I imagine you were just dying to?
A lot of soul searching. You know, it's painful coming that close, and you wonder until you do it. You say, well, you know, it's... If you look back at the history of the game, a lot of people did not win a major championship that were capable. Mm-hmm. I always say, too, Smiley, that during the champions dinner on Tuesday night this week, I said, you know how lucky we are to be in this room? Because we do know fully capable people who never won this tournament. Mm. And people who... we know could have won, you know, and Johnny Miller, Tom Weisskopf, and people like that. And you go, you're pretty fortunate to have overcome the competition that week and then to be in that room. So you're pretty lucky that way.
What did you learn about all of those, you know, if you call them failures? I wouldn't call them failures. You were so close, and that's really quality golf. It's hard to win major championships. You need a little luck on your side. You know, going into that 94 Masters, what was different about that week and the preparation leading up to it to where, you know, you were able to learn from your past experiences to be able to win that golf tournament?
All the times I missed, you remember good play, but you always have a critical point where you feel like you failed. You don't hit an approach shot right, and you don't get a putt down, or you hit a bad drive. It could be a million things.
It happens so fast, doesn't it?
It really does. It really does. But I had a really kind of a uncommon start in 1995 when I won, because I'd missed a couple of cuts before. I missed a cut at New Orleans before. And it was amazing. Tom Kite called me. And he said, Ben, our old teacher, Harvey Penick, had just passed away. So we made a plan and flew back to Austin And we buried him and came back down here Tuesday afternoon, late, or Wednesday. So I had already been here for like one day. Mm. And Carl Jackson, my old teacher, my old caddy, took a look at me. He said a couple of things. He said, Ben, you look like you're killing snakes. He said, you're swinging too fast. Slow down.
Because your head's probably all over the place. You know, you just lost your mentor, the guy that you've called a million times, you know, whether it's about golf, life, and that guy is now gone. It could not have been easy.
We knew it was going to happen at some point, but it, lo and behold, it happened. And then I came back down here, and when Carl got a hold of me, and he just calmed me down quite a bit, and he said two things. He said, put the ball further back in your stance and make a tighter turn. I started hitting the ball very solidly. And
that quick.
My confidence grew just like that, and hit some good putts late in the evening. And I said, you know, this is my favorite place to play. I want to see how this little experiment, how far it'll take me. And first day I played well. Simple thought, very simple up here. Mm-hmm. Second day was nice. Third day was nice. I saw some nice things happen. And it's funny, I never thought about, obviously I was thinking about Harvey a little bit, but it didn't consume my mind. Mm. And I had this calm and peace about it. And it just happened like a dream.
And you were 43 years old in 1995, too. 43,
I mean, not too many contend when they're 43 and above for a major.
And but that's the experience at Augusta National. I imagine over the 39 years that you had Carl Jackson caddying for you, that you guys had probably a pretty good game plan of how not only to attack the golf course, but how your game, you know, caters to Augusta National.
He could read me like a book.
Really?
And he's just been a dear friend for so many years. 1976 was my first year that I had Carl.
How'd y'all get paired up? Is it just by chance?
I had a wonderful guy before named Luke. Mm. Luke was great. And 1976, I had two wonderful friends. Well, often Mr. Stevens, Jack Stevens, and Carl worked for Jack Stevens. And a Fort Worth member named John Griffith, who's a member of Shady Oaks, and they knew Carl. And they kind of orchestrated it for me. And so I went out and I finished runner-up to Raymond Floyd that year, 1976. He beat us by 8 shots.
Oh, man.
Raymond. When Raymond got hot, it was no catching him. Anyway, we had a nice, Carl and I had a nice time of it, runner-up. So that was our first time, and we started gelling. And I never thought of anything else having Carl by my side.
And you had a really good Friday round in 1995, good round on Saturday, and all of a sudden you're leading going into Sunday. And for someone that's been in a final group, I know how long it is to where you wake up so much earlier, you don't sleep great, and then that tee time is so far away.
Oh.
And I had seen video or pictures of you and your older brother, little Charlie, chipping pine cones. You know what I did on the Sunday before? I accidentally watched Tin Cup, which was the wrong thing to do going into a Sunday of the final round. I should have been out chipping pine cones with you.
Well, you just try to, like you say, there's so much time. You know, I'm kind of an early riser, and when you start, you know, tee off at 2:30, it's excruciating waiting.
It is.
So we tried to bide our time somehow. But I just was going out that last day, and I said, I'm just going to play. I'm just going to have fun and play. And just had I've had times where, you know, you're tormented by this or that, but I had a very peaceful mind, which was
funny how that works.
I said, late in the round, you know, I made that birdie at 16 and 17. And 17, I made a hell of a putt there. And I stopped and I said, I can't believe this is happening this week. Mm.
And what about, so your wife, Julie, kind of talked about how maybe that week you were getting some Harvey bounces. And on Sunday, that second hole in the 14th hole, heard we had some left drives that kicked back in the fairway to where, you know, maybe that doesn't happen on another week.
Well, you're right. You've got to have some breaks to win. There's no question. Whatever form they come in. But those two, the second hole, yeah, that was, you know, fairly good hook, and it stayed up somehow. Mm. We all know
that creek down
there. I've been there a million times down there.
And it's ain't no fun. You can't get out of there.
It's no fun. So got out of that one. And 14, it was a soft right bounce, but it was just enough to where I could hook this 8-iron, land it short of the green, and ran up there in good shape. So that those two shots helped quite a bit.
Incredible. Well, winning two Masters championships, I imagine, was 1995 your more favorite one of the two?
It'll always be.
Everyone's favorite.
84 was a relief. a relief that I could get it done. But 95 is out of this world.
Well, you were part of four Ryder Cup teams, and as we head into a big Ryder Cup this year at Bethpage, Keegan Bradley, you know, he's a player that very well is talented enough to qualify on points. You've been a player. You've also been a captain when we think about that 1999 Ryder Cup at Brookline.
Right.
Just thinking about what faces Keegan Bradley as a captain and as a potential player, you know, what comes to mind for you of what faces him?
First of all, Keegan is very competitive, really competitive. He's playing really well.
He can really play. Well.
I actually texted him a good while ago, and I said, just keep making the team. You're playing great. He's a leader.
Mm-hmm.
He's a leader, and I know that many nights he puts his head on the pillow and he's going, how am I going to pair these guys?
And did you have the same thing?
Yeah, because you don't want to make a mistake.
Mm.
But it's an impossibility that your pairings will be infallible. It doesn't work that way. You have some guys that you wouldn't think that would do well excel in the Ryder Cup. There's an extra gear that sometimes they find. But you know one thing, those guys live and breathe for the Ryder Cup. And it's maybe at the top of their list. It's amazing. And they've got some unbelievable players.
Do they ever. And I think one of the big debates amongst golf fans or analysts, and it's always how they assemble a team, talking about a captain. For you, were you somebody that relied more so on form, experience, or a player who maybe is young, didn't have the experience that you just believed in?
You know, I had most of my thoughts were how my players were going to get around the country club in Brookline.
That particular course.
To me, and how they're going to handle it. And it's one of my favorite golf courses that I've ever played.
Awesome.
And it's a little quirky.
Blind tee shots.
A lot of blind tee shots, old-fashioned. You got to know the greens are smallish.
Mm-hmm.
But how well they prepared and what that golf course could give them. You have to play some imaginative golf there. We were getting thrashed.
10-6 going into Sunday, right? Your big speech?
4 points. You know, I did. I told them. I said, look, every time they've had a competition here, an American has won. And I said, don't let this be the other way. And I could tell that the afternoon before the last match, I could tell how well these guys were playing.
Mm.
And they were just getting beat by the smallest margins. But they were knowing the course better. And they were fired up. And they were kind of spirited and angry. I've never seen, they started so well that last day. It was an explosive start. And boom, we were right back into it.
Yep.
So, and I tell you what, Hal Sutton, I've never seen a guy play so well. He played the dangest golf that week of anybody. He was the backbone of the team.
Mm. Is that who you followed a lot watching?
Yeah, oh, he was, and the team, you know, rallied around him. His words were unbelievable. But here comes Justin Leonard. That was the most amazing finish. Mm-hmm. And that putt on 17 was just, it incredible. Was like a meteor. It was incredible. Like a meteor hit. And it was our day. It was our day.
Well, it's going to be
a heck of a team next
year. You sure did. And it's going to be in another incredible Ryder Cup, especially coming off Rome, where it felt like the Europeans never were going to let the United States have a chance that week.
They played well.
It did play well, and I'm really excited to see how these teams take shape. I'm sure you're going to have a rooting interest as well. Maybe some Texans will be on that team. We'll have to see.
I'll tell you who's kind of high on my list to contend this week.
Mm-hmm.
Oberg.
Oberg.
Man, he looks really good to me.
He's, you know, I think he was built in a lab.
He got a taste of it last year, finished runner-up here. And I know he has to love it here, but why watch that guy play? Mm. I love the way he goes about it. He does not take long over the ball, and man, can he take a cut at it. It's beautiful.
It is really beautiful. Let's finish there. Let's talk about this Masters, and you just mentioned Ludvig Oberg. Are there any other players that are on your radar that you feel like that have a chance?
Oh, Scottie Scheffler and Jordan. Matsuyama fascinates me. God, he's so strong and got
and
a great
really good with the wedge.
Strength of character and mind.
Mm.
I a lot of others too. It's just fascinating watching people trying to get themselves in position this week, how well they react to certain circumstances. Because this place makes you really think. You have to have an imagination to play well around here.
Mm.
You just sort of assess your chances of playing a golf shot.
Yes.
You know, you say, well, am I good enough today to hit this ball over there towards that pin? Or I better just go a little bit over this way.
Is there a crucial shot on the back nine? Everybody talks about that 12th shot. Do you think there's one that's more crucial than that on the back nine?
It's the nature of water always is it gets in the specter of things because you can fluctuate a lot of shots that way. But obviously 12, you've got to hit a shot there. Whether what kind of shot you're going to try to play your second shot at 13 if you've driven it well.
Mm-hmm.
And 15 to me is an unbelievable. It just sits, the green is just there below you, way down. And that's what I mean by knowing how far that ball can travel downhill.
Mm.
And you only hope to hit the right type of shot.
How far downhill did Carl say that shot played at 15?
Yeah, it plays probably 10 or 12 yards shorter. A club anyway, at least the club.
You know, every week we get yardage books and it gives us elevation for plus minus of what a shot is playing uphill, downhill. Augusta National, when you get your yardage book, it's just a number and you don't have any plus or minus for elevation. You have to figure it out on your own.
You throw the book away. You know, it's funny, Carl and I always, we never went by yardage.
Mm.
We went by clubs. We always say, well, this looks like a 3-iron or 5-iron.
That is insane.
Kidding. That's just the way we did it.
Did you do that anywhere else, or was it just Augusta National?
I did it quite a bit. I didn't rely on yardage so much, unless it was a course that required it. But, I mean, changes of elevation, and you saw it too when you played. When it warmed up here, the ball seemed to really travel.
Mm-hmm.
So day by day, shots played differently. And then if it was chilly and windy, it would really change things.
For sure. So. Well, I guess we all naturally know what clubs we hit on certain holes. So that it just takes me a second because we're so ingrained on TrackMan, foresight, hitting your number, being, you know, so exacting at Augusta National and precise. And then you listen to two-time Master Champion say, you know what, we didn't even use numbers. Like, that is just crazy to me.
I know. Now, later on, you know, when I've started Champions Tour, I started relying on yardage a little bit more, but it just, this place, you could just throw it out the window, really.
Man, well, this has been fantastic, man, and I always appreciate your kindness. I think when anybody spent any time around you, they feel like they met a friend they've known for a very long time, and for me, you've always been so kind to me, especially when I was going through my struggles in the game of golf. You sent me a note a time or two, and it's meant the world to me, and always been a big fan of yours, and of course, love the rest of your family and Julie, so it's always a pleasure.
Thanks, Miley. Well, you've always been somebody who people love you, and you do such a good job, and I never forget playing with you, and you played well here, and so I just carry on your work. We enjoy listening to you.
Thank you, Ben. Well, I appreciate it. This has been a lot of fun.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our lovely fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too, so please keep it up.
For all the good people of YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes, so I'm happy to come on and shoot the...
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.